You are listening to True Crime Twins, a true crime podcast hosted by Chloe and Melina Cantor. True Crime Twins is produced by Crawlspace Media. Welcome back to True Crime Twins. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Melina.
Thanks for listening.
How's it going, Chloe?
I'm good, you know, thinking about true crime like always. Did you hear that Jussie Smollett was arrested again?
I haven't heard about him in a really long time, like a year maybe.
Well, he's been indicted in Illinois for a couple of charges related to the alleged staged attack that he, you know, paid his two friends to do in Chicago.
On himself?
Yes.
Yeah, that was wild. Like, I remember when that happened, I couldn't get enough of that.
I was inclined to believe him at first, and there were a couple
So was I.
Yeah, and there were a couple of people that pointed out some of the details that just were kind of ridiculous, but I was just thinking, who would do that? So I really tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I think there's a lot of evidence supporting that he staged it, which is just horrible. So I was actually upset when the DA dropped the charges unexpectedly.
Was the city of Chicago, like the police.
Right.
The commissioner made a statement. He like sounded like he was going to cry. He was like, he said, this is a scar that our city did not deserve, or something like that.
Right. And I think they have an active lawsuit against him for damages for the costs of the investigation into that crime. So he has been charged again, so, and could probably face up to 3 years in state prison if he's convicted.
Do we know what the charge is exactly? Is it fraud? Is it like false police report?
I think some of the charges are about making false statements to the police,
right.
Reporting a heinous hate crime that he knew did not occur. So
that was the whole point of this, was that it was to provoke an emotional response because he just made it very heinous.
I'm seeing it's disorderly conduct, 6 counts of disorderly conduct, and I think each of those have specific things related to what he did, including lying to the authorities.
So, Chloe, what do you make of his like mental state?
I think,
like, why do you think he would do this
for attention? I think that's really the only explanation for why he did this. I think he really wanted attention and publicity.
Because what he did, like, could have potentially, like, influenced politics.
Well, people were talking about, they were calling it a modern-day lynching, and there was legislation for anti-lynching laws, so some have speculated that maybe he was, I don't know, trying to add fuel to the fire, but, you know, no one except for him really knows exactly why he did it, but just watching how he's conducted himself since the incident, I feel like he has, He really just wanted attention. I think that he might have a personality disorder.
Yeah, it's really frightening.
He's a liar. He's a compulsive liar too.
Yeah, which can be seen in personality flaws, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. So we'll see how this plays out.
I think that he should be actually tried. I don't know whatever happened to that whole dropped case thing. Like, there was apparently like a conflict of interest or something. But I do think that he should be tried for this.
It looks like it'll happen. So, we'll
and I'm sure he maintains his innocence.
Well, he has. He has not admitted to the farce.
Yeah, it's,
even
it's
though
honestly,
the two even though the two people that did it say admitted. That he paid him and have a check from him, I think it was $3,000.
It's just so cringy. Well, I read something. I read something that said that he's a good actor but a terrible writer. Because he made this whole like scenario in his head. It's like, what?
Yeah, it was just, you're right. He should stick to what he knows. But anyway, we'll be following that. So, but that's not what we're talking
Very
about today.
To so what are we talking about today?
So you might have heard of it. You might have not. It is an unsolved, actually undetermined death. We're talking about Maitrece Richardson, who disappeared and was later found dead in Malibu, California.
Yes, she was 24 years old when she disappeared. It was actually, it was subject to media attention because she disappeared shortly after leaving police custody. So,
and not only that, her mother, the police were in contact with Maitrece's mother throughout the evening. And she, it's actually recorded, like it's on record that she was saying
on YouTube,
please call me before you do anything. Don't just let her go. But that's what they did. And obviously, the mother of someone that was arrested is not who the police answer to. I understand that, but she had expressed clearly that she had concerns about her daughter being let go in the mental state that she was clearly in. And let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yes, we need some background here. So yes. Let's talk about my Treece before I get on my soapbox. So she was a very intelligent, attractive
California girl.
Yeah, very promising. She had graduated from Cal State Fullerton in 2008 with a bachelor's degree in psychology. She was in a committed relationship with Tessa Moon. She had plans to go to grad school. She was extremely put together and intelligent. She was employed as an executive assistant and was also a talented dancer, so worked as a go-go dancer. Some people have falsely reported that maybe she was an exotic dancer or a stripper.
No.
That is false.
I think that she was just very fun-loving and she was really gorgeous, so I think that she was getting gigs like that. I think she danced once at like a Playboy party.
I see her as like, you know, when you see the photos of her and you see her smile, it reminds me of dance motivators you would see at like Sweet 16.
Totally.
You know, just someone with a really lovely magnetic personality that just can like get people to have fun.
Yes. So she's very, very smart. She's gorgeous. And she kind of has like a heart of gold. She like lives with her great grandmother at the time and takes care of her.
Right. So she's also a caretaker, which is a very difficult undertaking, as people who have been in that position know. And I mean, I don't know how much care the grandmother required, but I just think that's a lovely thing to do, to take care of, you know, elderly people in your family.
And I'm pretty sure that I read that was like her choice. Like she volunteered to do that. So
My Treece was 24 years old.
Yeah.
She was a young woman. You know, a lot of people in their early 20s aren't typically doing that. They're focusing on their own path. But, you know, at the same time, she was. So this is someone who's buttoned up, lots of potential, ambitious. But shortly before her disappearance, my Treece started to exhibit some erratic behavior. And I think it got to the point where it can be considered altered mental status.
Yeah.
She just wasn't acting like her typical self.
So let's go back to the evening that she disappeared. Basically, this whole story starts on the evening of September 16th, 2009, she drove by herself to a very high-end restaurant in Malibu called Joffrey's Restaurant. And she, even when she got there, like even when the valet guy walked up to her, she was like saying some really weird stuff. Like she said that she like knew Michael. I think Michael Jackson had died recently at that time. When did he die? 2009? I think so.
That sounds right.
Yeah. So like, unless she like was predicting his death, but I'm pretty sure he was already dead. She was saying that she knew Michael Jackson and that like she was going to avenge his death. And I think she also said something about going to Mars. So this is just very strange thought process here.
So she ends up going into the restaurant and joins a group. You know, she starts, I think, eating alone and observes a group having fun, sitting together at a table. And she kind of
took it upon herself.
Yeah, kind of approaches them and says, may I join you? And, you know, she's
lively
and engaging. And so I think they were probably put off a little bit, but they
were like, yeah,
sure, fine. So they, you know, let her join them. And she was saying similar statements. And I think when we're looking at it under a psychology lens, I would say that some of the things that she was saying were a little bit grandiose, you know, just saying that she's from another planet. And
so what does that mean? What does grandiose mean?
Grandiose is viewing yourself in a delusional manner where you are superhuman, otherworldly, superior to others.
So why do you think that she was doing this? Like, why do you think she was saying these things?
I think the grandiose, odd statements and erratic behavior, you know, just lacking kind of social boundaries, like she was showing, just saying the weird things to the valet and joining that group
being
of strangers.
Very expansive.
Yeah, I think that she was having some sort of either manic or psychotic episode,
or both,
that night. Yeah, something. Her behavior was certainly altered. I don't think she normally spoke that way. So
no, I don't think she did either. Like, I think that her girlfriend said she had like no history of anything,
and
no mental illness. So this is a new thing.
Right. And I think maybe the day before she had left like an odd message on a friend's windshield that said black woman scorned. And he had no idea
like why,
what she was talking about, where that even came from. So something like that, so out of context, sort of indicates
bizarre.
Yeah. So I think that she was certainly going through something, maybe a psychotic or manic break.
And something new. And it's right. Probably very scary. But when you're like that, sometimes you'll make choices that you wouldn't otherwise make, like right. Going to this restaurant alone.
She was incredibly vulnerable that night.
Yes.
So she racks up
a bill, I think, of $89. Yeah.
And this, who knows what she got? It's like a very expensive place.
I think she got a steak or something really.
And she could have just gotten like two cocktails and that would have been...
Two cocktails and a steak.
Yeah. That could have been $89. But yeah. Anyway, sorry.
So yeah, she had a nice meal and didn't have any money to pay for it. And she... I think they ended up calling her grandmother from the restaurant, or was it her mother that they called?
I think that she called her great-grandmother, and like, her great-grandmother was like, what? Like it was like the middle of the night. She's like, what do you mean? Like okay. Like, and she tried to like give them her credit card number over the phone, and they were like they didn't accept that because like they also need like ID or right. something.
And she was too old to handle a situation.
Yeah, so it was like weird that she would call her.
Right, kind of the wrong person to call.
Because her mom would have probably taken care of it.
But she didn't actually need to call anyone. There was money and her cell phone in her car.
She was highly impaired.
There was no reason for her to not pay her bill. She was acting like someone that had no money when she did have money, insufficient funds to pay for that in her car, which shows the level of impairment. So
the people at Joffrey's called the police.
Yep.
Out of concern for her. They weren't like, you know, scared or upset. They're kind of just like, this girl kind of is acting weird.
I got a very compassionate tone, actually, from the 911 caller. You know, she just was a nice girl that was acting very strange, and they weren't really sure what to do. She can't seem to pay her bill. So the police end up picking her up. They didn't find her, I think, her phone or her money to pay the bill, which would have gotten her out of that situation, and maybe they could have gotten her the help they clearly needed.
It was locked in her car, but they did find marijuana though.
So
less than an ounce, like whatever. But they arrested her for possession, I think, and failure to pay for services.
Now that marijuana is legal, maybe they wouldn't have just arrested. I mean, we know they wouldn't have arrested her right away. Maybe they would have looked more and, you know, found her money, found her phone, and gotten her the help she needed. I'm a little, you know, this is the beginning of a lot of decisions that were made that were
questionable,
very questionable and upsetting.
So they also, before they took her to jail, they determined that she wasn't like impaired on a substance, you know? So it's like, I don't understand why they would just take her to jail if she's reportedly acting this way. Like, I feel like that the first choice that I would have made, even though, you know, I probably will never be in this position, but just based off of what I know, they should have brought her to the emergency room to evaluate her.
That would have actually helped her. So the spokesman for the Los Angeles County Police Department said that, you know, this was in response to people's complaints that she shouldn't have been released from jail that night. He said that Maitrice was released from jail because she exhibited no signs of mental illness or intoxication. She was fine. She's an adult, you know, which is implying that people are acting like, you know,
they're overreacting,
acting like she's a missing child. But I think it's well established by many witnesses that Maitrice was not okay and did show signs of impairment that night.
Very much so. And I think that the fact that she had no phone, no money, she literally had like no personal effects. And they thought it would be okay to just let her go at 12:30 in the morning. And just even after talking to her mom, like, who knows, maybe there was like a shift change. And
that's what I'm thinking happened.
And somebody like was like, oh, yeah, whatever, fine. They like didn't even know about this. But still, that's still negligent to me.
They said, you know, and I said they don't answer to her. But if you listen to the calls, the personnel at the station
is receptive.
He promised that she wouldn't be released until later, you know, when after the sun came up and it was daytime.
Yeah.
He promised.
Her mom was like, she doesn't take the bus. She was like, yeah, she could take a bus. And she's like, no. She's like, she doesn't take the bus. So it's like, what would she have done? She didn't have money for the bus, even if she did.
Yeah, I think it's clear that it was irresponsible for her to be released. But nonetheless, Maitrice was released at 12:28 a.m. on September 17th. With no belongings or any means for calling for help if she needed it.
Right. So this was at the Malibu Lost Hills Sheriff's Department in Agoura, California. And the next time that she was seen again was at 6:30 a.m., 6 hours later, 5.5-ish miles away from that station in a Calabasas neighborhood called Montanito. I think that's how you pronounce it. Montanito. Yeah. So it's basically just like a hilly, mountainous area, tons of
mansions, very affluent.
Very affluent, but also tons of like woods.
Right. Yes. It's very sparsely populated.
Right. So she was seen at 6:30, 5.5 miles away. So she presumably got there on foot. She was probably just wandering around all night, is my guess.
Yeah, especially
unless somebody picked her up and dropped her off there for whatever reason. I don't see it.
Dropped her off so nearby. She was still in that same area.
Yeah.
So many hours later, she probably was wandering, and you know, when someone is that someone's clearly heavily impaired, if they're just wandering for that many hours, you know, how is she relieving herself? Has she eaten? Has she had anything to drink? It's very disconcerting. Mm-hmm. So she actually ends up in the backyard of a former news anchor. He opens his window, yells out and asks if she's okay. And she says, oh, yes, I'm just resting.
And then she kind of just takes off.
Right. But she seemed kind of calm and relaxed in his backyard. And he thought that her affect was strange.
So I believe that he called the police, right?
Yes, he did. But I don't think the police handled it with much urgency because, you know, she was gone. So there wasn't an active threat, which I understand.
Yeah, and it's not like she really did anything. Like, sure, she was trespassing. She was on somebody's lawn. But I think that people can really explain that away. They can be like, oh, yeah, they had a rough night and somehow, like, wandered off and ended up there and, like, passed out. But she's gone now, like you said.
So she was found in Malibu.
In that area where she was last seen by the guy who called the police about her.
Yes.
Like in that very same vicinity.
She was naked and mummified, lying in a creek bed. So the detectives in the case, against the orders of the coroner, actually removed her body from the scene. They were not able to determine a cause of death. It's unclear if she was murdered or if she died of natural causes.
She was basically bones. I don't think she had any like viscera, internal organs, anything like that.
It's funny, you know, some sources will say mummified. Doesn't that mean that some tissues preserved, or could that mean, you think, if it was just bones?
I read a report, a pretty official report, that said that they only found bones and that they weren't all together.
Okay, so perhaps it's just
I also read that as well. I also read that somewhere else, but this was like an official police report. It was like a coroner, like, basically it was about the protocol that the detectives breached by removing her body without waiting for the coroner to arrive. Why the hell?
But if she was just bones, how would they know that she was naked? Because, you know,
because there would be clothes on her.
Well, I mean, with animal activity, if a body's in the woods, I feel like
they found her clothes elsewhere.
Right, but couldn't have that been removed by animals?
Or she could have removed it herself.
I just don't know how they could know
they can't
for sure whether or not she was wearing them. But, I mean, not
her remains did not have clothes is all I can say.
And that could mean a couple of things. It can indicate, you know, a sexual assault. But I've read, too, that people...
Or just tampering with the body after.
Tampering with the body after. But I think sometimes when people, I think, are freezing to death, they take off their clothes because I think you
have... What?
Yes, I've read that. You have the sensation of becoming really hot. So it's not uncommon when people are about to freeze to death to take off all of their clothes.
Yes, if that's what happened.
Right. So it's just another potential situation where I don't think it's logical to speculate unless they know... I just don't know how they know for a fact that she wasn't wearing clothes.
Yeah, I think they found some of her clothes, like, farther away, like, more towards the houses, like, mm-hmm. less into the woods. So because of her level of decomposition, they couldn't determine if it was a homicide. But it's obviously extremely strange and suspicious circumstances. They found her body by chance because they were actually looking for, like, a site where marijuana growers were growing a crap ton of marijuana and, like, trafficking. Like, it was like a high scale operation at one point. So I believe that the police were originally out there looking for signs of that, and then when they stumbled upon her. So it was completely by chance, and I feel like that this all could have been prevented. This was like each step along the way, like you said before, like it was like the beginning of just a series of steps.
Right, and the protocol exists for a reason, and I feel like if the protocol was followed appropriately, this wouldn't have happened. She would have gotten help, and she wouldn't have died, because no matter how she died, if it was because she was so out of it that she starved or froze to death in the woods because she got lost and couldn't figure out how to get back to the road, or if someone killed her, either way, she was unnecessarily vulnerable when she was in the protection of police just a few hours earlier. Mm-hmm. It's a really disturbing story. Her parents actually sued the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, and in 2011, they were each awarded $450,000 in a settlement.
So what does that say? Is that admitting wrongdoing, or is it just settling, just preventing, you know, future legal action?
All we could do is speculate. I think a settlement doesn't necessarily indicate that the person that's settling is admitting to guilt. Often it's just, I don't want this to go to court. I don't want to deal with this anymore. Here's a payout. Yeah. We're done. Sometimes people are unwilling to drop a lawsuit until a person says on the record that they're guilty, which I've actually seen before. There was a local case where in Connecticut, where a 13-year-old boy killed, no, I'm sorry, an 11-year-old boy killed a 13-year-old boy. This was in Wilton, Connecticut. Although he was later arrested for manslaughter charges in relation to the crime, the parents of the victim also had a lawsuit against, you know, the alleged killer, and they only agreed to drop it if he said in a courtroom on the record that he was responsible for the death of their son, whose name was Nick Pariseau. So where does this case stand today, Melina?
It's still unsolved. There is a new sheriff in town at the Lost Hills Sheriff's Department. I believe it's Sheriff Villanueva, who seems very determined. It's good to have a new set of eyes, right?
Certainly. He definitely seems to care about the case. I'm sure that the relations between members of the sheriff's department
and the community and the family,
it's really difficult to heal.
Probably irreparable.
The California Attorney General's office investigated the sheriff's office handling of the case at the request of the Richardson family. And the attorney general at the time was actually Kamala Harris. She replied that there were no grounds for criminal charges against the sheriff or his deputies. She also found no evidence of mishandling of the Richardson case.
Interesting.
But in January of 2016, the office reversed itself and announced that it was beginning a criminal investigation of the case. So I'm not really sure where this is all coming from.
This whole case is just flip-flops. It's poorly handled. Everything's like against protocol. There's questionable choices. But it seems like that based off of the press conference that happened at the anniversary of her disappearance in 2019, they seem to have like a renewed passion for this. And they've offered a reward of $30,000 that three cities that kind of she encountered that night. So Malibu, Agoura, and Calabasas together are offering $30,000. And there's an anonymous tip line.
So who can people call if they have information about the Maitrese Richardson case?
They can call the following number, 310-906-0435. So, Chloe, I'm kind of comparing this to the Maura Murray case because even though nobody's found Maura Murray, they really don't know what happened to her. Just like people, just because they have Maitrese's body, it doesn't mean that they are any closer to knowing what happened to her. They just know that she's dead, but right. They don't know if she wandered off in the woods and expired to the elements. I hate that. I don't know why I just said that sentence. I'm sorry, but
people say that.
I know. It's not like you made it up. I just read that somewhere and I just went for it. But so
her expression is not your fault. You're not responsible for it.
She either died from exposure or someone did something to her.
Yeah, so not only is this case, you know, frustrating and it has, you know, political implications as well.
Plenty.
Maitrese was an African-American woman and she was also a gay woman. So, I mean, not that the police would have been privy to her sexuality, but in her, who knows what she said to them. In her, I mean, when they were reaching out for people to contact, she could have mentioned that she had a girlfriend. So there was a lot of outcry that the police would have handled it very differently if it was a white person. Yeah. You know, it's Malibu, it's Los Angeles. If it was a celebrity, would they have ever let her go in the middle of the night with no resources? Probably not. So I think that was a huge source of anguish and frustration for her family and loved ones. And I completely understand why.
So and I don't blame them. Sorry.
I don't either. No worries. Just on top of all of that, there's also just this extremely mysterious
element,
you know, and I can't imagine what it's like for the family to not even have the closure of how their daughter died, right, of what happened to her.
So based off of what we know, let's try to like kind of get into her head a little bit. I know that might be difficult, but imagine being her. She's been awake, who knows, possibly for days if she was manic. She is wandering around. Her muscles are fatiguing. She's tired.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but a lot of people will kind of associate certain psych terms as something
significantly less severe than it actually is. So people will say like, oh, I have to keep my desk just so, I'm so OCD.
Oh, or, I hate that.
Or like if they're hyper, oh, I'm so manic. For people that don't know, someone that's really manic will go without food, water, rest for a long period of time.
Which makes it worse, which is like the whole point.
Yes, you'll hear stories of people just pacing through the night, just walking all night, people pacing back and forth in their yards. There's just, they're so out of it that there is no awareness of basic needs, like toileting,
you don't think
eating,
about it,
sleeping, you don't think about it. So if she was really in that mental state, and I think there is every indication that she was, she would have walked until her muscles fatigued, like you said. It wouldn't be like her body saying like, okay, this is an unreasonable amount of walking that we're doing. You shouldn't be wandering around the canyons of Malibu
for miles and miles
without asking for help. And I mean, who knows, maybe there was no one to ask help from,
and we don't know what happened in those 6 hours. We have no idea who she encountered. Like, nobody's come forward.
No.
Or maybe they have and they're just withholding that information for whatever investigative purpose, but nobody knows what exactly she was doing in that 6 hour period in between when she left the police station and when she was seen at 6:30. So she could have encountered people, she could have not.
And if she, and I mean, it seemed, you know, if she hadn't, if she was just alone that whole time, just wandering and wandering, I don't think that, you know, she's already manic. I think without food and water and, you know, with the exhaustion, I think the confusion escalates. I don't think it's totally far-fetched that she could have died naturally.
I agree, but we also need to put consideration the impulsivity, the complete and utter vulnerability that she was in. So sure, she could have been vulnerable to just dying in the woods, but she also was so vulnerable to a person hurting her.
Right. She had no stranger danger. She asked, you know, I mean, obviously when you're in a public place, she's not in any danger asking a group of strangers to, you know, to join them for dinner, but she seemed to lack typical like social mores. Like, she didn't have those boundaries. So I think she was more susceptible to suggestion and more susceptible to being tricked or convinced.
And somebody could have just seen that from just seeing her, because she's clearly not in a good way.
Oh, the way that she, I'm sure that she was kind of, you know, slowly walking around. The way that she was acting in her whole affect was probably inappropriate for the surroundings. It's not like she's dressed for traversing in the hills of Malibu. It's just,
No, she was probably dressed for dinner.
Right.
Yeah.
With whole, carrying nothing.
Carrying nothing. Just, she just had her clothes. That's it. No ID, no nothing. So she's literally a perfect target. So I wish that we had more information. I wish that I wish so many things about this case, but most of all, I wish that there was any evidence at all. Like, with certain things, like when, I mean, certain circumstances when bodies are found and they're to that level of decomposition where you can't determine what exactly happened, there are sometimes things that will help you figure out what happened. Like, for example, with the Casey Anthony case, her daughter Kaylee, she was found in the woods, just bones, but it's like, but she was a child, so it's like, how does a child end up in the woods? So it's like, obviously something bad happened to
right,
her.
There's no reasonable explanation for
otherwise
her. Right,
but there isn't a reasonable explanation here, because she was an adult, she could have wandered. It's true.
Yes, absolutely. But she also could have been put there, and I think I read in a few places that the land where she was found on, I think people produce pornography there.
It's like the valley, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, maybe not. I don't.
I've read that too.
The valley is the San Fernando Valley. She was in Malibu.
There's multiple valleys.
But when people say the valley,
That's what they mean?
I think they mean San Fernando Valley.
Okay.
So maybe
somebody can confirm this to us.
This is an East Coast show.
Yes. Any California listeners, please.
I just don't want to act like I know what I'm talking about when I don't know.
You're right.
When it comes to California, I really don't.
But I did. I'm not blaming the valley if this is the wrong valley, but yeah, she was found in an area where, I guess, in some of those houses that porn was filmed or is filmed, and they were there to investigate drug trafficking as well. So maybe this isn't a very good area.
Right. She could have encountered someone that was perhaps on the fringes.
Yeah. And like this guy who called the police and saw her, I don't know, I don't want to be too upfront, but why should we trust him?
Oh, we shouldn't. I think people see that he's a news anchor and they see that he's, you know,
are you all right?
Right.
Yeah.
But I think witnesses claim to have seen her in his tennis courts. I think some people said that she saw Maitrice trying to enter his home.
Or it looked like she was trying to enter or leave.
Right.
And they also heard screaming.
Right. So what if
What if he did something to her? That's possible.
And there's also no way of really knowing if she did die on September 17th, 2009. She could have been alive for days or weeks or months. We really don't know. She could have been held at one of those houses. Or she could have died that night. Or rather that morning.
It's maddening how little is actually known. I really hope that more answers can come to the surface at some time soon.
Mm-hmm. In terms of victimology, I do think that it's likely that somebody did something to her because she was kind of a really vulnerable target. But I just don't know. But that's my instinct.
I think when you're thinking about people that, you know, die or because of starvation or exhaustion due to a psychotic mental state, I think that she also meets the victimology of that profile as well. So you can,
what do you think is more likely though? What do you think happens more often? Like somebody that's in that state, do you think that they're more likely to be victimized or more likely to accidentally die?
It's an impossible question for a non-statistician to answer. I have no clue. I think that both are extremely uncommon circumstances and both have a lot of conditions. So I think there's really, maybe that statistic is out there somewhere, but I think when you're in that mental state with conditional statistics, you are more likely to have one of those two things happen to you. I don't know which one is more likely.
Yeah. I'd love to know, but my instinct is that somebody did something. What's your instinct?
I have no idea. For some reason, I'm arguing that she died of starvation, but I don't know if that's actually because of what I believe or if I just feel like arguing.
Okay. Well,
that's just me being honest.
Well, we want to know what everybody else thinks. I really think that this case deserves more attention. I think more people should be talking about it because I do think that it's true. Like, I think that she was on the cover of People or something.
She was. And there's just so little to work on.
Yeah, there is little to work on.
Is there something that we're missing? Like, anyone that's listening.
A huge piece.
I know that we're missing a lot. And I think that a lot is missing to the general public. But, you know, the general public who is listening to this right now, if there's any big thing that we're missing, if there's a detail that you think kind of pushes it over the edge on what possibly could have happened to her, please, you know, join the conversation because, honestly, I think about this case a lot.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that should have never happened. And again, anybody who might know anything at all, it is 310-906-0435. We want justice for Maitrice.